And good morning, one and all. Welcome to Maine Arts Alive. This is a special season, and as a result, we have what I might call a special show. This is our Maine Arts Alive cast's version of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. It's our own version, and we hope you like it. Our cast, our players, consist of our narrator, Wendy Schweikert. John Chapin is playing Scrooge. Bob Burke is several ghosts. And I, Michael Donahue, your host for the show, will fill in here and there. Okay. The important thing for all of you, and you might want to sit back and relax, because this is an interesting tale. It's a tale about a ghost, actually several ghosts. One of the ghosts was Scrooge's old partner, Marley. Now, Marley was dead to begin with. Now, there's no doubt whatsoever that he was dead. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, the chief mourner, and even Scrooge signed it. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Scrooge knew he was dead? Oh, of course he did. How could it be otherwise? Scrooge and he were partners for, oh, I don't know how many years. Scrooge was his sole executor, his sole administrator, his sole assign, his sole friend, and his sole mourner. And even Scrooge was not so dreadfully cut up by the sad event. But really, the point that we're making is that there is no doubt that Marley was dead. Now, this must be distinctly understood, or nothing wonderful can come of the story we are about to relate. As the story goes,
once upon a time, of all the good days in the year, on Christmas Eve, old Scrooge sat busy in his counting house. It was cold, bleak, biting weather. The door of Scrooge's office was open so that he might keep his eye upon his clerk, who, in a dismal little cell beyond, was copying letters. Scrooge had a very small fire, but the clerk's fire was so very much smaller that it looked like one coal. But he couldn't replenish it, for Scrooge kept the coal box in his own room. So all the clerk could do is put on his white comforter and try to warm himself at the candle, in which effort, not being a man of a strong imagination, he failed.
A Merry Christmas, Uncle! God save you!
It was the voice of Scrooge's nephew, who came upon him so quickly that this was the first intimation he had of his approach.
Bah! Humbug!
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean it, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Well, come then. What right have you to be dismal? You're rich enough.
What else can I be when I live in such a world of fools as this? Merry Christmas. What's Christmas time to you but a time for paying bills without money? A time for finding yourself a year old but not an hour richer? If I could work my will, every idiot who goes about with Merry Christmas on his lips should be boiled with his own pudding and buried with a stake of holly through his heart.
Uncle!
Nephew, keep Christmas in your own way and let me keep it in mine.
Keep it? But you don't keep it.
Let me leave it alone, then. Much good it may do you. Much good it has ever done you.
Well, don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
Never.
But why?
Why did you get married?
Because I fell in love.
Because you fell in love,
growled Scrooge, as if that were the only one thing in the world more ridiculous than a Merry Christmas.
Good afternoon.
I am sorry with all my heart to find you so resolute. We have never had any quarrel to which I have been a party, but I have made the trial in homage to Christmas, and I'll keep my Christmas humor to the last. So, a Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Good afternoon.
And a Happy New Year.
Good afternoon.
His nephew left the room without an angry word. He stopped at the outer door to bestow the greetings of the season on the clerk, who, cold as he was warmer than Scrooge, for he returned the greetings cordially.
My clerk was 15 shillings a week, and a wife and family, talking about a Merry Christmas. I'll retire to Bedlam.
His clerk, in letting Scrooge's nephew out, had let another in. A portly gentleman, pleasant to behold, who now stood with his hat off in Scrooge's office.
Scrooge and Marley's, I believe. Have I the pleasure of addressing Mr. Scrooge or Mr. Marley?
Mr. Marley died 7 years ago, this very night.
Oh, we have no doubt his liberality is well represented by his surviving partner.
At the ominous word liberality, Scrooge frowned and shook his head and handed the credentials back.
As this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and the destitute, who suffer greatly at the present time. Many thousands are in want of common necessities. I mean, hundreds of thousands are in want of common comforts, sir.
Are there no prisons?
Oh, plenty of prisons.
And the Union workhouses, are they still in operation?
They are still. I wish I could say that they are or not.
The treadmill and the poor law are in full vigor, then?
Oh, both very busy, sir.
Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course. I'm very glad to hear it.
Knowing that these institutions scarcely furnish Christian cheer of mind and body, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat, drink, means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time, among others, when want is keenly felt and an abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for?
Nothing.
You wish to be anonymous?
I wish to be left alone. Since you ask me what I wish, sir, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I can't afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there.
Oh, many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they would rather die, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Good afternoon, sir.
Seeing clearly that it would be useless to pursue the point, the gentleman withdrew. Scrooge resumed his labors with an improved opinion of himself. At length, the hour of shutting up the counting house arrived. With an ill will, Scrooge dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted to the fact that his expectant clerk, who instantly snuffed his candle out and put on his hat.
You'll want all day tomorrow, I suppose.
If it's quite convenient, sir.
It's not convenient and it's not fair. If I was to hold back half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound. And yet you don't think me ill-used when I pay a day's wages for no work.
Oh, it is only once a year, sir.
A poor excuse for picking a man's pocket every 25th of December. But I suppose you must have the whole day. Be here all the earlier next morning.
Oh, yeah, yes, sir.
Scrooge took his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern. Having read all the newspapers, he went home to bed. He lived in chambers which had once belonged to his deceased's partner, Marley. It was old enough now and dreary enough, for nobody lived in it but Scrooge. Now, it is a fact that there was nothing at all particular about the knocker on the door, except that it was very large. It is also a fact that Scrooge had seen it, night and morning, during his whole residence in that place. Also, that Scrooge had as little of what is called fancy about him as any man in the city of London. Yet Scrooge, having his key in the lock of the door, saw in the knocker, without its undergoing any intermediate process of change, not a knocker, but Marley's face. Marley's face had a dismal light about it, like a bad lobster in a dark cellar. It was not angry or ferocious, but looked at Scrooge as Marley used to look, with ghostly spectacles turned up on its ghostly forehead. As Scrooge looked fixedly at this phenomenon, it was a knocker again. But he put his hand upon the key he had relinquished, turned it sturdily, walked in and lighted his candle, said,
"Pooh-pooh,"
and closed the door with a bang. He fastened the door and walked across the hall and up the stairs, slowly trimming his candle as he went. Up Scrooge went. Darkness is cheap, and Scrooge liked it. But before he shut his heavy door, he walked through his rooms to see that all was right. He had just enough recollection of the face to desire to do that. Quite satisfied, he closed his door and locked himself in. Double locked himself in, which was not his custom. Thus secured against surprise, he took off his cravat, put on his dressing gown, slippers, and his nightcap, and sat down before the fire to take his gruel. As he sat back in the chair, there began a clanking noise deep down below, as if some person were dragging a heavy chain. The noise became much louder as it came up the stairs straight toward his door.
"It's humbug, still. I won't believe it."
His color changed, though, when without a pause it came on through the heavy locked door and passed into the room before his eyes. Upon its coming in, the dying flame leapt up as though it cried, "I know him, Marley's ghost," and fell again. Indeed it was. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights, and boots. The chain he drew was clasped about his middle. It was long and wound about him like a tail, and it was made of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, ledgers, deeds, and heavy purses wrought in steel. His body was so transparent, so that Scrooge, observing him, could see two buttons on the coat behind. Though Scrooge felt the chilling influence of its death-cold eyes and marked the very texture of the folded kerchief bound about its head and chin, he was still incredulous and fought against his senses.
"What do you want with me?"
"Much."
"Who are you?"
"Ask me who I was."
"Very well, who were you then?"
"In life I was your partner, Jacob Marley."
Can you sit down?"
"I can."
"Do it then."
Scrooge asked the question because he didn't know whether a ghost so transparent might find himself in a condition to take a chair. But the ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace as if he were quite used to it.
"You don't believe in me."
"I do not."
"What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your senses? Why do you doubt your senses?"
Because a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an underdone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you, whatever you are."
At this, the spirit raised a frightful cry and shook its chain with such a dismal and appalling noise that Scrooge held on tight to his chair to save himself from falling. How much greater was his horror when the phantom, taking off the bandage round its head and its lower jaw, dropped down upon its breast. Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face.
"Mercy! Dreadful apparition! Why do you trouble me?"
"Man of the worldly mind, do you believe in me or not?"
"I do. I must. But why do spirits walk the earth, and why do they come to me?"
"It is required of every man that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men and travel far and wide. And if that spirit does not come forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! And witness what it cannot share, but might have shared on earth and turned to happiness."
"You are chained. Tell me why."
"I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard. I girded it of my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you? Or would you know the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain. Hear me. My time is nearly gone. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate.
You were always a good friend to me. Thank you.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob? I think I'd rather not.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over with Jacob?
Expect the 2nd on the next night at the same hour, the 3rd upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake you remember what has passed between us.
When it had said these words, the spectre took its wrapper from the table and bound it round its head as before. Scrooge ventured to raise his eyes again and found his supernatural visitor confronting him with its chain wound over and about its arm. The apparition walked backward from him, and at every step it took, the window raised itself a little, so that when the spectre reached it, it was wide open. At that moment, it was gone. Scrooge closed the window and examined the door by which the ghost had entered. It was double locked, as he had locked it with his own hands, and the bolts were undisturbed. He tried to say, humbug, but stopped at the first syllable, and being from the emotion he had undergone, or the fatigues of the day, or his glimpse of the invisible world, or the dull conversation of the ghost, or the lateness of the hour, much in need of sleep, went straight to bed without undressing and fell asleep upon the instant. When Scrooge awoke, it was so dark that looking out of bed, he could scarcely distinguish the transparent window from the opaque walls of his chamber. He was endeavoring to pierce the darkness with his ferret eyes when the chimes of a neighboring church struck the 4 quarters. So he listened for the hour. To his great astonishment, the heavy bell went on from 6 to 7, and from 7 to 8, and regularly up to 12, then stopped. 12. It was past 2 when he went to bed. The clock was wrong. An icicle must have got into the works. 12. The curtains of his bed were drawn aside by a hand, and Scrooge, starting up into a half-recumbent attitude, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man, viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave him the appearance of having receded from the view, and being diminished to a child's proportions. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin.
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past.
Long past?
No, your past. The things that you will see with me are but shadows of the things that have been. They have no consciousness of us. Rise and walk with me.
It would have been in vain for Scrooge to plead that the weather and the hour were not adapted to pedestrian purposes, that bed was warm, and the thermometer a long way below freezing. that he was clad but lightly in his slippers, dressing gown, and nightcap, and that he had a cold upon him at that time. The grasp, though gentle as a woman's hand, was not to be resisted. He rose, but finding that the spirit made towards the window, clasped his robe in supplication.
I am mortal, liable to fall.
Bear but a touch of my hand, there, and you shall be upheld in more than this.
As the words were spoken, they passed through the wall and stood upon an open country road, with fields on either hand. The city had entirely vanished. Not a vestige of it was to be seen. The darkness and the mist had vanished with it, for it was a clear, cold winter day, with snow upon the ground.
Good heaven! I was bred in this place. I was a boy here.
They left the high road by a well-remembered lane, and soon approached a mansion of dull red brick. They went, the ghost and Scrooge, to a door at the back of the house. It opened before them, and disclosed a long, bare, melancholy room, made barer still by lines of plain deal forms and desks. At one of these, a lonely boy was reading near a feeble fire, his poor forgotten self as he used to be.
Oh, poor boy. I wish, but it's too late now.
What is the matter?
Nothing. Nothing. There was a boy singing a Christmas carol at my door last night. I should like to have given him something, that's all.
The ghost smiled thoughtfully and waved its hand, saying as it did so,
Let us see another Christmas.
Scrooge's former self grew larger at the words, and the room became a little darker and more dirty. There he was again, alone, when all the other boys had gone home for the holidays. A little girl, much younger than the boy, came darting in, and putting her arms about his neck, and often kissing him, addressed him as her dear, dear brother. "I have come to bring you home, dear brother," said the child, clapping her tiny hands and bending down to laugh. "To bring you home, home, home."
Always a delicate creature, whom a breath might have withered. But she had a large heart.
So she had.
She died a woman, and had, as I think, children.
A one child.
True. Your nephew.
Yes.
Scrooge seemed uneasy in his mind, and answered very briefly. Although they had but that moment left the school behind them, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
I know it. I was apprenticed here.
They went in. At sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting behind such a high desk that if he had been 2 inches taller, he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement.
Oh, why, it's old Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again.
Oh, my boys, no more work tonight. Christmas Eve, you know, Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up, clear away, and let's have room here.
There were dances and more dances, and there was cake. And there was a great piece of cold roast, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came after the roast and boiled, when old Fezziwig stood out to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig.
A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude, is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money, 3 or 4, perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves praise?
Oh, it isn't that. He had the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome. A pleasure or toil, the happiness he gave is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
Scrooge felt the spirit's glance and stopped.
What is the matter?
Nothing. No, I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now, that's all.
My time grows short. Quickly.
Again, Scrooge saw himself. He was older now, a man in the prime of life. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in a mourning dress, in whose eyes there were tears as she turned to him and said,
"It matters little. To you, very little. Another idol has displaced me. And if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve."
"What idol has displaced you?"
"A golden one. You fear the world too much. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one, until the master passion, gain, engrosses you. Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man. I release you with a full heart for the love of him you once were. May you be happy in the life you have chosen."
"Spirit, show me no more. Conduct me home. Why do you delight to torture me?"
He was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further of being in his own bedroom. He gave the cap a parting squeeze, in which his hand relaxed, and he barely had time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.
Awaking in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore, and sitting up in bed to get his thoughts together, Scrooge had no occasion to be told that the bell was again upon the stroke of one. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, a quarter of an hour went by, yet nothing came. As he lay in his bed, a blaze of ruddy light streamed upon it when the clock proclaimed the hour, more alarming than a dozen ghosts. At last, however, he began to think that the source and secret of this ghostly light might be in the adjoining room. The moment Scrooge's hand was on the lock, a strange voice called him by his name and bade him enter. He obeyed. Heaped up on the floor to form a kind of throne were turkeys, geese, game, poultry, brawn, great joints of meat, sucking pigs, long wreaths of sausages, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, red-hot chestnuts, cherry-cheeked apples, juicy oranges, luscious pears, immense 12 cakes, and seething bowls of punch. In easy state upon a couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, and held it up, high up, to shed its light on Scrooge as he came peeping round the door.
Come in, and know me better. I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me. You have never seen the like of me before.
Oh, never! Spirit, conduct me where you will. If you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Touch my robe.
Perhaps it was his sympathy with all poor men that led the ghost straight to Scrooge's clerk, for there he went and took Scrooge with him to the threshold of their door. In came Bob Cratchit, with at least 3 feet of comforter hanging down before him, and his threadbare clothes darned up and brushed to look seasonable, and Tiny Tim upon his shoulder. Alas for Tiny Tim, he bore a little crutch, and had his limbs supported by an iron frame. "And how did little Tim behave?" asked Mrs. Cratchit.
"He was good as cold and better. Somehow he gets thoughtful sitting so by himself so much, and thinks the strangest things you have ever heard. He told me, coming home, that he hoped the people saw him in the church, because he was a cripple, and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day. Oh, who would be lame beggars walking and make blind men see?
Bob's voice was tremulous when he told them this, and trembled more when he said that Tiny Tim was growing strong and hearty. Such a bustle ensued that you might have thought a goose the rarest of all birds. There never was such a goose. Then Bob proposed,
"A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us."
Tiny Tim sat very close to his father's side, upon his little stool. Bob held his withered little hand in his, as he loved the child and wished to keep him by his side, and dreaded that he might be taken from him.
Spirit, tell me if Tiny Tim will live.
I see a vacant seat in the poor chimney corner, and a crutch without an owner, carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, no, oh no, kind spirits, he will be spared.
If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, none other of my race will find him here. What then? If he be like to die, he had better do it and decrease the surplus population.
By this time it was getting dark and snowing heavily. It was a great surprise to Scrooge to hear a hearty laugh. It was a much greater surprise to recognize it as his own nephew's, and to find himself in a bright, dry, gleaming room, with the spirit standing smiling by his side.
He said that Christmas was a humbug, as I live. He believed it, too. He's a comical old fella. I'm sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims? Himself, always. Here, he takes it into his head to dislike us, and he won't come and dine with us. What's the consequence? He loses some pleasant moments which could do him no harm. I mean to give him the same chance every year, whether he likes it or not, for I pity him.
The whole scene passed off in the breath of the last words spoken by his nephew, and he and the spirit were again upon their travels. It was strange that while Scrooge remained unaltered in his outward form, the ghost grew older, clearly older.
Are spirits' lives so short?
My life upon this globe is very brief. It ends tonight.
Tonight?
Tonight at midnight. Hark, the time is drawing near.
Tell me, spirit, I see something hidden moving at your feet.
From out of the folds of its robe, it brought two children. Wretched, abject, frightful, hideous, miserable. They knelt down at its feet and clung upon the outside of its garment. Scrooge started back, appalled.
Spirit, are they yours?
They are man's. This boy is ignorance. This girl is want. Beware them both. But most of all, beware this boy. For on his brow I see that written which is doom, unless the writing be erased.
Have they no refuge or resource?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? Are there no prisons?
The bell struck 12. Scrooge looked about him for the ghost and saw it not. As the last stroke ceased to vibrate, he remembered the prediction of old Jacob Marley, and lifting up his eyes, beheld a solemn phantom, draped and hooded, coming like a mist along the ground towards him. The phantom slowly, gravely, silently approached. When it came, Scrooge bent down upon his knee, for in the very air through which this spirit moved, it seemed to scatter gloom and mystery.
I am in the presence of the ghost of Christmas yet to come.
The spirit answered not, but pointed onward with its hand.
You are about to show me shadows of the things that have not happened, but will happen in the time before us. Is that so, spirit?
The upper portion of the garment was contracted for an instant in its folds, as if the spirit had inclined its head. That was the only answer he received.
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any spectre I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, I am prepared to bear you company and do it with a thankful heart. Will you not speak to me?
It gave him no reply. The hand was pointed straight before them.
Lead on, lead on. The night is waning fast and it's precious time to me, I know. Lead on, spirit.
They scarcely seemed to enter the city, for the city, rather, seemed to spring up about them, amongst the merchants who hurried up and down and clinked the money in their pockets.
No, I don't know much about it. I only know he's dead. Happened last night. God knows what was the matter with him. Left all his money to his company, I guess. He hasn't left it to me, that's all I know. Oh, I'll only go to his funeral if there's a lunch provided.
Scrooge listened to this dialogue in horror. Next, Scrooge and the Phantom entered poor Bob Cratchit's house, the dwelling he had visited before, and found the mother and the children seated round the fire, quiet. Very quiet.
I went to his grave site today. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. My little child.
Spectre, something informs me that our parting moment is at hand. Tell me what man that was whom we saw lying dead.
The ghost of Christmas yet to come conveyed him as before. He joined it once again, accompanied it until they reached an iron gate, a churchyard. The spirit stood among the graves and pointed down to one. Scrooge advanced toward it trembling.
Before I draw nearer to that stone to which you point, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be? Or are they the shadows of the things that may be only?
The spirit was immovable as ever. Scrooge crept towards it, trembling as he went, and following the pointed finger, read upon the stone of the neglected grave his own name, Ebenezer Scrooge.
Spirit, why show me this if I am past all hope?
For the first time, the hand appeared to shake.
I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. That the spirits of all three shall live within me. Oh, tell me I may erase the writing on this stone.
In his agony, he caught the spectral hand. It sought to free itself, but he was strong in his entreaty and detained it. The spirit, stronger yet, repulsed him as it shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down into a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. Best and happiest of all, the time before him was his own to make amends in.
I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. Oh, Jacob Marley, heaven in the Christmas time be praised for this. The shadows of the things that would have been may be dispelled. They will be, I know they will. I don't know what to do next,
cried Scrooge, laughing and crying in the same breath.
I'm as light as a feather. I'm as happy as an angel. I am as merry as a schoolboy. I am as giddy as a drunken man. A Merry Christmas to everybody. A Happy New Year to all the world.
Running to the window, he opened it and put out his head. No fog, no mist. Clear, bright, jovial, stirring, cold, golden day.
What's today?
Cried Scrooge, calling downward to a boy in Sunday clothes.
Hey! What's today, fine fellow?
Today? Well, it's Christmas Day.
It's Christmas Day. I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night. They can do anything they like. Of course they can, of course they can. Hello, my fine fellow. Do you know the butcher's shop in the next street but one, at the corner?
I should hope I do.
Oh, an intelligent boy, a remarkable boy. Do you know whether they've sold the prize turkey that was hanging up there? Not the little prize turkey, the big one.
What, the one as big as me?
What a delightful boy. It's a pleasure to talk to him. Yes, my boy, that one.
It's hanging there now.
Is it? Go and buy it.
Walker!
No, I am in earnest. Go and buy it and tell them to bring it here. Come back with the man and I'll give you a shilling. Come back with him in less than 5 minutes and I'll give you half a crown.
The boy was off like a shot.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's. He shan't know who sends it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim.
The hand in which he wrote the address was not a steady one, but write it he did somehow, and went downstairs to open the street door, ready for the return of the boy with the turkey.
Oh, why, it's impossible to carry that to Camden Town. You must have a cab.
The chuckle with which he said this, and the chuckle with which he paid for the turkey, and the chuckle with which he paid for the cab, and the chuckle with which he recompensed the boy were only to be exceeded by the chuckle with which he sat down breathless in his chair again and chuckled till he cried. He dressed himself all in his best and at last got out into the streets. He went to church and walked about the streets and watched the people hurrying to and fro and patted children on the head. In the afternoon, he turned his steps toward his nephew's house. He passed the door a dozen times before he had the courage to go up and knock. But he made a dash and did it.
Why, bless my soul, who's that?
It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I have come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?
Let him in? It is a mercy he didn't shake his arm off. He was at home in 5 minutes. Nothing could be heartier. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful happiness. But he was early at the office next morning. He must be there first to catch Bob Cratchit coming late. That was the thing he had set his heart upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. 9:15. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come. Cratchit's hat was off before he opened the door, his comforter too. He was on his stool in a jiffy, as if he were trying to overtake the clock.
"Hello,"
growled Scrooge in his accustomed voice, as near as he could feign it.
"What do you mean by coming here at this time of day?"
I'm very sorry, sir. I am behind my time.
You are. Yes, I think you are. Step this way, sir, if you please.
It's only once a year. It shall not be repeated. I was making rather merry yesterday, sir.
Now, I'll tell you what, my friend. I am not going to stand this sort of thing any longer. And therefore,
Scrooge continued, leaping from his stool and giving Bob such a dig in the ribs that Cratchit staggered backwards.
And therefore, I'm about to raise your salary.
Bob trembled and got a little nearer to the ruler. He had a momentary idea of knocking Scrooge down with it, holding him and calling to the people in the court for help with a straight coat.
A merry Christmas, Bob! A merrier Christmas, Bob, my good fellow, than I have given you for many a year. I'll raise your salary and endeavor to assist your struggling family. And we will discuss your affairs this very afternoon over a bowl of smoking bishop, Bob. Make up the fires and buy another coal scuttle before you dot another I, Bob Cratchit.
Scrooge was better than his word. He did it all, and infinitely more. And to Tiny Tim, who did not die, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew, or any other good old city, town, or borough in the good old world. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for his own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him. He had no further intercourse with spirits, and it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone!
You have been listening to a reading of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, performed by the Maine Arts Alive Players. And just a reminder, you're listening to WERU Radio, 89.9 in the Down East area, 99.9 in Bangor. This is a special time of year, and this has been a very special Maine Arts Alive. We hope you enjoyed it, and I wish all of you, just a wonderful holiday season. And we'll see you next month, so good night, and take care.